Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Adam Schefter Podcast. It's one of the best football podcasts for a reason. Top executives, coaches, players, and the best analysts in the game. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to the Adam Schefter Podcast as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week to do an interview. Check out my man. He is producing Chinay Ngolo Jr. 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Also check him out Thursday nights producing a show with Clinton Yates and L. Duncan on the intersection of sports and culture. And for some reason, he keeps on rooting for the Giants. Shannon Penn, what's going on?
It's that most wonderful time of year. Football is back, Bomani, and I don't know about you, but it has snuck up on me.
And I just don't think that people realize it's time for football.
Right, and I think, obviously, it's a multitude of factors that go into it. You know, one, with the NFL not having a preseason, you know, everything that's going on socially in the country. And then, I mean, we got NBA right now. Like, I know we're going to get to the NFL, but, like, we got NBA playoffs. Like, this is totally different. Like, when I plan a show and every day with Chinay and Go, like, this is football. Like, we're supposed to be previewing the season, fantasy teams, sleepers, all of that stuff. But, no, I'm breaking down, you know, LeBron and Giannis's MVP candidacies.
Think about this. On Thursday night, at the same time, Serena Williams will be playing in the U.S. Open semifinals. The Lakers and the Rockets will be playing in a second-round playoff game. And it will be the first game of the NFL season with Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Like, serious question. Have we ever had more star power on display at one time in one night than we're going to have right now?
How are you going to be able to juggle it all? Like, are you going to have one on a device and one on your TV? How are you going to handle it all tonight, Bo?
Yo, it's a good question because I'm not a juggler, right? Like, I try to just watch one thing and then keep it going because I'm not going to be able to pay attention to all of it. So I think my focus is probably going to be on the NFL, and then secondarily, it will be on the tennis, and then after that, it will be on the basketball because I'm doing all this talking, and then it just dawned on me, I ain't got to go to work on Friday. At least not do TV work. You know what I'm saying? So I can do this more recreationally.
All right, well, before we get to the actual football game, what are your thoughts, though, leading up to it? Everything that we've seen here in the world, and you got the NFL with their social messaging and the decals that'll be on the helmets, and you got apparently the Black National Anthem will be played tonight. So what are your thoughts with all that stuff?
First of all, I got to say the same thing about the NFL that I said about the NBA when they got this going. This is amazing. I can't believe they pulled this off. I did not think that there was any way in the world that they would be able to play football under these circumstances, especially as chaotic as it looked going into the training camp as they was trying to come to agreements. I am blown away. They have made this work. Like, I have to give them all the props in the world, assuming they're telling the truth about the test results. I figure they probably are, right? But you never know. Anyway, I am amazed that we got here in the first place. And now for the social stuff. I want to hear how Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth handle this stuff, right? Like, those dudes that call NBA games, they be hanging out with a bunch of black dudes all the time, whether they want to or not. Not all of them have been involved in the conversations, but they've been a little closer to the conversations, right, in the NBA. Who Al Michaels been talking to these days about? Like, would you be terribly surprised, Shannon, if sometime in the first week or two, some broadcaster mess around and say the wrong thing? Like, keep in mind, it could have been Tom Brenneman here.
Like, so, you know, just imagine that in the NFL if something like that would happen. But you never know. Like, and that's where we are. And I would just, you know, hope for those. One, to your initial question, no, I wouldn't be surprised. But then I hope that these broadcasts have been coached up enough to understand, hey, this is acceptable, this is not acceptable, and there's no middle ground for this now. Like, I understand we're in a whole new world where we're having these tough, challenging conversations and all. Like, that's all well and good. But during my football broadcast, I don't really need to hear those tough and challenging questions. If you want to do it in the pre-show, that's good. Halftime, sure, go right at it. But in the game, you best believe I want to hear X's and O's and breaking that stuff down. Because if you slip up, oh, buddy, if you slip up and say the wrong thing, that's it.
Yeah, that is probably the way to lead. I also think that football because of the nature of a football broadcast, there's less room to talk about other stuff that they'll be safe. Like in basketball, it's interesting because the action is so continuous that it allows the broadcaster to kind of go on tangents. Like Van Gundy and Mark Jackson talk about any old thing. You have that in baseball, too. Y'all had that in football. In football, we wind up talking about the game. I just know that there's some cats at some of these networks that they got to call in before and be like, hey there, Chris, you might want to be careful on this one.
And pull it back just a little bit. Just a smidge.
Yes. Here's my question, though. Is there any chance that Mike Tirico going to take this as an opportunity to go hard about it? Maybe he's had enough. He might have a Herb Street moment. Tirico might get out here and start crying because it's just overwhelming.
But that's the thing. That's what we are, though. And if he did, like, normally I would say probably not. But everything has changed. Like, you can't put anything past anyone in 2020. Like, that's where we are. Like, could you, like you referenced Herb Street. I don't think we would have gotten that Herb Street moment last year or the year before, yet these problems existed then. But that's where we are. I think everybody across the board, you know, with everything that's going on, COVID and otherwise, like everybody, like emotionally, I think we're just pushed to the brink where now we're more liable to say and do things that we probably wouldn't have done in the past.
No, we are, man. But think about this. Imagine Tirico just looking at the camera and being like, listen to what they're trying to tell us. You know?
And he has that get out moment, you know?
Yeah, or maybe it's not even that. Maybe he stays full on in this place that he been in, right? And he's just like, they're trying to tell us the pain that they are in. We can't relate to how it feels when you get pulled over by the cops. Like, imagine me and you having a conversation with Tirico. We're like, yo, man, you know, you see them lights, man. You start getting nervous. He's like, oh, no, I just figured that there must be some misunderstanding.
I would believe that, but dog, like, this is 2020. Like, you never know. Like, I don't know. Like, dog, he might come out some kente cloth tie tonight. Who knows?
There's no telling.
It's real out here, man. It's real.
There's no telling. If I'm not mistaken, Dan Patrick had Tirico on the radio to talk about, like, the larger social stuff, and I didn't listen to it, but I was like, yo, whose idea was that?
Like, I know who we can get.
And honestly, I need to go find it. I was fascinated by the idea. Like, except I would like to hear me talk to Tirico about these things. Can you imagine a 1 hour right time with Mike Tirico?
Hey, Gabe, make it happen.
Mike Tirico ain't never heard of me.
I'm tuning in, absolutely.
Mike Tirico, NABJ, what's that? Them letters don't even sound good together. Like, he'd be all day long confused, man. I talked about this all with Dan a couple days ago. I may talk about this later, but I don't know about you, but a lot of people, when they heard that Lift Every Voice and Sing was going to be played at these games, said that it was pandering. And I was like, if this is pandering, then pander away. I am always here for Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Now the question is, though, because it's been posed when this first came up, though, like, well, Lift Every Voice and Sing. Do you know the second verse?
I know a decent bit of it.
Like, my reaction when it was asked was, wait, there's a second verse?
Hold on, Shannon. What kind of HBCU did you go to where y'all didn't get to the second verse?
We didn't get to the second verse, and I lie to you not. I actually grew up in a Catholic church and during Bible study, yeah. We used to sing it before Bible study every Sunday morning. That's what happens when you go to a Catholic church in the middle of Bed-Stuy. But yeah, we used to sing Lift Every Voice every morning, and we never got to the second verse. So I legit didn't know there was a second verse.
Oh, and the third.
Wait, there's a third?
Here's the thing, though. I bet if I drop you some lines from it, you'll know. Like, the second verse starts, stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod. The third verse starts, God of our weary years, God of our silent tears. And the rap on the third verse is, true to our God, true to our native land. Like, those are some lines that come up a lot in other stuff. Like, with me in the second and third.
That sound like a Victus to me.
Yeah, and see, like, with me in the second and third verse, I don't know every word of them, but I can pop in and out. Like, when you be singing along in the car, but you don't know every word, I can do that.
Yeah, I know. I'm not about too many guarantees, but I can guarantee you the NFL ain't going to no second or third verse.
No. I don't even know if we gonna get to sing a song. I don't necessarily know, but I am here for it. I love that song. I think that song is incredible. Like, objectively speaking, it is incredible. And as I've told people, I went on Spotify after this all dropped to try to find, like, some of the best versions of Lift Every Voice and Sing, and apparently not a lot of people have recorded good versions. But did you ever watch the old Daniel Boone show when you was a kid?
Not a lot, to be honest.
You know, they had a white man dressed up as a Native American, right? Mm-hmm. I lie to you not. That white man who was dressed up as a Native American, let me make sure I get his name right. Ed Ames? Yes, Ed Ames. Ed Ames recorded a cover of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Yeah, but like, he didn't sing it like as some testament to black people. He just sang the song. That's how dope Lift Every Voice and Sing is, that a white man who made his money dressing up like a Native American or Daniel Boone heard the song and was like, no, we're just going to do it straight. And you would never know it was Lift Every Voice and Sing because it is, of course, being performed by the man who played Mingo on Daniel Boone.
Got you. Learn something every day.
Yes. But no, I'm here for that. I'm okay with the stuff on the field. Like, I think the stuff on the field, like for the NBA, for example, I think Black Lives Matter on the court means way more than these things on the back of the jerseys that at this point are useless. You know, like the ones they gave that most of them had the options of were just so hollow in the first place. Like, I understand why somebody thought it was a good idea, but I think it ultimately hasn't done much of anything. But I think, like, the Black Lives Matter on the floor matters. I think it's a big step for the NFL to be out here talking about end racism, and it takes all of us, just because they know or they believe on some level that there's a whole lot of their fans that don't even want to be told that. You know? So I'm like, all right, go ahead. Way to go and up. It's going to be interesting to see who does what demonstrations like before the game. Like, what do you think is going to happen with the Cowboys?
I wouldn't be surprised if they had another situation like they did, what, 2-3 years ago when they all took knees.
Yeah.
And I can see something along those lines. And if you remember with the Ravens and Ray Lewis, you know, one knee was protest, two knees were for Jesus, right?
Was that
was his quote?
Yes.
So all the symbolism, like, I get all that and I'm fine. I don't have a problem with it. I think for me, I'm more interested in, like, what are your actionable items that you're going to be doing? Like, list of the things that you want to accomplish, similar to what the Vikings have done, what the Ravens have done. Like what are the things that you guys are actually going to be doing in the community? Like, how much money are you putting up, and where exactly is the money going to be allocated to? Like, that's what I'm more interested in. But for the symbolism and the messaging, like, I'm fine. I don't have a problem with it. But, like, when it comes down to the crux of this, like, what are you doing? Are you trying to increase voter awareness and things like that? Not trying to be, you know, negative Nancy, but that's the stuff that I'm more interested in. Similar to the NBA, and we've seen the NBA, and, you know, you got the Boston Celtics, for example, coming out with a $300 million initiative of things that they're going to be doing. So I'm more focused with that. But the symbols and the end racism and all of that, like, I'm fine. Do we get any word whether or not the NFL going to put Black Lives Matter on the field, though?
No, it's end racism.
We can't go that far, huh? We can go just a little bit, but not a lot, right?
Yeah. We going to stop at end racism. That's where we're going to get on that. And I'm with you on that part. And see, that's where Jerry Jones, I think, is interesting to me. Is if Jerry Jones is so damn concerned about them people standing up for the anthem, write a check, right? If you want to make sure, because I don't care how mad I be at the national anthem. Could you buy me off to get me to stand for the national anthem? Hell yeah, you could. Yeah, ain't no question about it. Like, my dad used to talk about, he would go to the games, like, in the 70s, and he wouldn't stand for the national anthem because he just ain't that tight. And now he does. And you know why? Because he got tired of people throwing stuff at him. He was just like, okay, this ain't worth it, right? I'll go ahead and do it. If Jerry wants these dudes to stand, write a giant check, and I guarantee you they will all stand up. And don't write one of them Dak Prescott, here's a little for you, here's a little for the police checks. No. Just write a big-ass check, and I bet you they'll be standing for the national anthem like they play and Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Well, I do wonder, in regards to the national anthem, prior to Kaepernick, for most people, were they standing because they were paying some sort of respect, or were they standing just because that's what they were conditioned to do the entire life, so that's what they felt the right thing was to do?
Yeah.
Like, you stand, take your hat off, like, you're acknowledging a level of respect, but I just don't know how many people prior to Kaepernick being in attention to, you know, what he was doing, whether or not people were standing to give respect, or if they were just standing because they were standing, you know, all throughout school, and that's just what they were taught was the right thing to do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, dope. People stand up for the national anthem largely because you're supposed to. Like, overall, like, there are certainly, like, some Drew Brees types who put their hand over their heart, and they see the flag, and they see everything that's good about America, and it really, like, gets them choked up. And I had to, like, when I was thinking about Lift Every Voice and Sing, and I plan to do something about this next week, and I may still do it on the podcast, but, like, Lift Every Voice and Sing really is stirring to me. Like, it does it for me. And I had never really thought about the fact that, like, for, I guess, a lot of white people, and I guess some black people too, but mostly white people, the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, I guess, hits them in the same way. Like, it really, it really comes to a place for them in their hearts. Like, that's their jam. And so they roll with it. They feel it. And so I think there's some people who that's where they are when the national anthem is played, man. But, hey, man, me and you have been places where people play the national anthem. You look around at them. They don't all care.
No. And it's interesting, too. Like, I've been in plenty of press boxes, and I've used to do public address. And, you know, you're in the midst of doing everything that you're doing that you can't stand. You know, you're working. And I don't know. I find it interesting when people pick and choose when they feel as though it's important, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and we're all there in this place. I just think that the thing that the NBA did that I thought was important in terms of the players and they're deciding to come and play in the bubble and everything else is they really did make it a big part of the television broadcast in total. Like, and I have not found that it has interfered with the games. And I thought that was going to be their dilemma, is that the games could not be swallowed by the social stuff because people are, in fact, tuning in for the games. Like, I think there's room for the social stuff, but it couldn't become the dominant factor there. But the NBA has done a great job with the PSA spots that they're running during commercial breaks and the things they're talking about with the players and stuff like that. Like, I think they've done well with it. I don't know if the NFL is capable of doing well with it because the NBA clearly made the decision it's going to be some white people who ain't going to like this, and oh well, that's what it's going to be. The NFL doesn't have that card in their deck, right? The stop caring what white people think card, that's not one they play. The only card they have is ask these white people what they want.
I get all of that, and for the NFL, a larger part, you got to follow the money, you know? And I get why that's more of a concern, but that I think also that has a lot to do with how the league, the presentation of the leagues themselves, you know, like the NBA, even prior to this, has been very upfront with black athletes, young black athletes being the face of their league. Whereas the NFL, it's always been about the shield and you're advertising the teams in the league more so than the individual players and athletes themselves. So the NBA, I think, has always, you know, not always, but in most recent history has been very upfront about we're very comfortable letting, you know, young black men be the faces and the voices of our league.
Well, they also had no other choice.
Well, that too. But, you know, it's no shock when you see that. Whereas the NFL, yes, you have, you know, black stars and you have, you know, black quarterbacks now. But, you know, for the most part, it's still the shield and still the league, you know?
Yes. No, you're totally correct. Like, the NBA is much more personality driven. Now, it's going to be interesting seeing how this all changes as the quarterback position becomes blacker.
Right.
Assuming they don't change the rules. When I say assuming they don't change the rules, don't forget that when Michael Vick got this cracking, they changed the rules. You remember that?
Right.
When Michael Vick and the boys like Culpepper and all them was out there doing damage, what did they do? They increased the penalties on like roughing the passer. Not the penalty itself because it was still 15 yards, but it became much more punitive. Just a little love tap in any way, and all of a sudden you got 15 yards and thereby slowed down the defensive ends, which then thereby made life a lot easier for guys who could not move who also happened to be white. They were not going to let that whole game flip up without a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Paradigm of football has changed, and the drop straight back, not really be able to move, throw the ball, dudes, they ain't really making those no more. You can't play that way at a lower level. You can't even play that way in college like that anymore. When you start seeing schools like USC and Miami and like those classic pro-style teams start instituting that spread, all of a sudden the game changes. Now we're going to have more of these black quarterbacks. And what the NFL has been able to sell is, hey, look at these white dudes. Look at them. Look at them, right? We got them right here. They ain't even got to be cool. Here we go. White dudes, right here for you. Now we in a situation where out of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, Shannon, how many of them black?
I would say probably at least, what, 7, right? The top non-black quarterbacks, you would say, of a top 10 list. You would still include Aaron Rodgers in there.
Yeah, that's shaky.
Would you still include Drew Brees?
And that's a little shaky, too. Tom Brady, that's a little shaky.
That's where I was going. Like, the Brady thing is always interesting. That's where I was going. But, no, to your point, like, the entire scope of the perception of that position, it's all changed now. And it'll be interesting to see how comfortable they are with letting some of those quarterbacks be the faces of the league, because for so long it's been the white quarterback, you know? Like, yeah, you can have Mahomes be, you know, your MVP, Super Bowl MVP. You can have Lamar Jackson be your MVP. But when you still say NFL, are those quarterbacks still the first name you think of, you know?
Yeah, try it like this. Pass offense DVOA per Football Outsiders, I got Aaron Schatz. Top five: Baltimore, Kansas City, Seattle, New Orleans, and Dallas. That's four out of five black quarterbacks. We ain't even got around to Deshaun Watson. Now, the other part that gets to be interesting is that as you start going to the bottom of DVOA, you don't really, like, then the blackness kind of dissipates. They still ain't really letting us play unless we gonna ball.
Right.
If you just gonna come out here and play a little bit, my brother, we can get a white dude to do that. You gotta be out here leaping tall buildings. One bound. Not a double bound. One bound.
Right. Or we'll still go out and sign a 41-year-old quarterbacks if need be. Who were coaching high school.
Yo, Peterman just got himself a $1 million contract, and he is one step away from the throne.
Still, right? Speaking of that, and I saw you earlier this week, how were we so wrong about Josh Rosen? Now that he's signed with Tampa Bay, he's on team number three now. How did we miss on Josh Rosen?
Yo, I don't know. Maybe soaking up some game from Tom Brady and soaking up some game from Arians. Byron Leftwich is good. And I actually saw an interesting quote from Byron Leftwich about Rosen, where basically he was just talking about the way it happens for players that, you know, for a quarterback especially, somebody can decide in year two or whatever that you're done, and then you're just disposed of and nobody ever gives you another real chance. It may be a really good thing for Josh Rosen that he wound up playing for an offensive coordinator who was a black quarterback, because the black quarterback can relate to the idea that they just tossing you out of here and not giving you a chance and might be inclined to give you a little more patience because he's know where it is that you coming from.
I'm still holding out hope. Like, there's still a chance, you know?
I mean, there's also a possibility that Josh Rosen could get on the field because Tom Brady is old, and I don't know why people are so positive that he's going to be good.
Well, I mean, well, they look at the weapons, and I know there's some questions about Mike Evans' availability for week one, but you look at the weapons that they had in the offense that they had last year, and they added Fournette, and they brought Gronk out of retirement. So, but to your point, though, I mean, Tampa Bay, they did draft an offensive tackle with their first-round pick, so there's still questions on the offensive line there for having a quarterback that's not mobile. So there are still questions there in Tampa. Like, to your point, I don't know why everybody assumes it's so much of a guarantee.
Yo, man, he was not good last year. Like, I wouldn't go so far as to say he was bad, but he was not good last year. He is a zillion years old. Like, maybe they'll get this going. Maybe everything will be cool. But I am not so positive that this is going to work out the way that people think that it's going to. And then we go wind up, aren't they putting Tampa, I mean, Tampa's playing New Orleans in week one, right? Like, that's the game
that
of the
correct.
Week.
Yeah.
Yo, man, Drew Brees, old as hell, too. I don't know why people look at both of those dudes and don't act like they out here getting old directly in front of us.
Right, and that's the thing, too, with New Orleans, and this conversation has come up with Kamara and his contract situation. It's like the Saints, their contracts and their salary cap situation is looking ugly. So if you're the Saints, yeah, you might as well pay Kamara now because you're not going to have the flexibility to do it in the future, and your time is now to win with Drew Brees. Because, like, what are the options? Like, Taysom Hill can't be your everyday quarterback. So if you're New Orleans, you got to go for it now. And if that means making sure that you secure Kamara now so that he won't possibly hold out, although he hasn't given any indications yet, he did miss some practice time. You know, you put all your chips in it now because there's no plan B.
Hold on now. You said Taysom Hill. You forgot who the backup quarterback is there.
Wait, New Orleans? Did I miss something? Is this
Jameis? Yeah, it's this weird thing in New Orleans where the backup quarterback makes $1 million and the third string quarterback makes $16 million.
And I, look, I tried, like, when Gabe reached out to me, like, no joke, Gabe reached out to me and I was like, you know, he wants to talk, you know, NFL. I was like, all right, cool, let me study real quick, because I lie to you not, Bo, full transparency. You and I mentioned it early at the top. Like, this season has snuck up on me.
Yes.
So I feel so bad the fact that I totally forgot Jameis signed with New Orleans. Like, that's
don't blame
me.
Like, don't blame me. How would you remember Jameis had gone there when everybody was out here talking about Taysom Hill? Right? How could they? Yo, it's going to be funny because Jameis going to be getting salty as hell when they keep talking about Taysom Hill and forget he there. Jameis going to be in the locker room on November 4th looking at Taysom Hill like, yo, who you vote for?
Well, speaking of that, and this is interesting too with Jameis and our discussion as far as quarterbacks getting another chance, do you think he'll get another shot as a starter? Not just a guy who can fill in and start, but as a starter.
Not on purpose, right? Like, he might get a spot, a chance. Like, he might get a chance in New Orleans. Like, somebody gets hurt and make a Tannehill situation, right? something happens, guy gets hurt, whatever, you come in and you go out to ball real hard, and then maybe you'll be able to keep a job. Like, I think maybe that's the circumstance and situation that he could wind up in. But that dude had 30 interceptions, man. I can't be mad at nobody who say they don't want to put a dude out there that threw 30 interceptions. But at the same time, I think he's the best backup quarterback in the NFL.
Really?
Who got a backup that you think is better than Jameis? Like, a guy that can win you a game. Because Jameis can lose you a game. But how many backup quarterbacks in the NFL right now can win you a game? Like, you can win a game with Nick Foles, but can Nick Foles win you a game?
Right, see, it's funny that you brought him up, because that's the one that I was thinking of. Like, any of these backup men right now, Trubisky's the starter. Take that for what it's worth. But, like, for me, I would have said that Foles probably would have been the best backup situation there in the league. So, for me, it would be Foles.
He was worse than Jameis the last time I saw. Yo, that's the thing. Like, when we talk about how bad the worst of Jameis is, we have to acknowledge it. But the fact that the best of Jameis is actually really good, that also matters. Like, it all comes into the wash. I can say all this about Jameis because he don't play for my team. Like, if he played for my team, I can't imagine how furious I'd be watching him, you know? But at the same time, as a backup quarterback, if you need somebody to win you a game, he is capable of winning you a game. Hey, speaking of winning a game, is that how many of the Giants are going to win? They're going to win a game?
See, that's the problem. The Giants out here after... Real quick with the Giants, because I gotta thank you. 2020 has been a tough stretch. It really has. But on the night when the DeAndre Baker news hit, you called me. That was one of the funniest conversations I've had this entire year. Like, I still... Man, still understand what the hell was going on with that dude. But, you know, the Giants released him. I think the Giants will be better this year. I think. I don't have anything concrete to tell you that will actually happen. Like, Joe Judge, I guess that's a good hire. Like, dog, I really don't know. Like, I think for me and the Giants, it's one of those situations where you want to say it can't get any worse, and you don't want to jinx it because the NFL and injuries happen. But, like, so I'm going to guess that they're going to get better, right? Because there's questions about, like, just looking at the NFC East, like, there's questions about Washington. There's still questions about Philadelphia. And I guess the Cowboys are the best team in that division, but I'm not, like, in love with the Cowboys either. So I assume that the Giants will get a couple of more wins, probably a top six pick in the draft, but I guess they'll be better, right?
Yo, so the thing for me with the Giants is, number one, your head coach gives strong clown vibes. Real strong clown vibes. Didn't he have them out there with no names on their jerseys in practice and was out here talking about that he was thinking about letting them hit Daniel Jones?
Oh, gosh. I know at one point they had the DBs doing a drill where they had tennis balls taped to their hands so that they wouldn't hold. Like, I guess those techniques work. I'm imagining. It kind of reminds me, when I saw that video, the video of the Giants DBs, reminds me of those quote-unquote trainers that got the kids out here doing all these wild exhibitions with broomsticks and hula hoops and all of that stuff. That's what it kind of reminds me of. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, it'd be one thing if, like, he was, you know, assistant principal McAdoo. Like, at least I would, like, know he's a clown. Like, I still don't know. That's why I don't know if I'm holding out hope. I think for me, ultimately, with the Giants this year, it's just wait and see, because I don't know. Like, at least with Eli, you knew what you were going to get. You were going to get some untimely interceptions. You're going to get a lot of derp face. Like, you knew that. You knew what you had. Like, with the Giants, like, I legit don't know. Like, I'd imagine that Saquon will probably still get, like, 40 carries a game, but that's all I got. Still don't have a pass rush. I'm still not sold on the defense, so,
The thing that Judge Joe Brown, or whatever his name is, is going to have to answer is this. Why should we listen to you? Right? Like, the way he's going about it and everything he's doing, it can all work if those dudes have a reason to listen to you. And the thing that he's just going to have to answer fundamentally is just like, yo, so why should we listen to you? Like, when you guys out here doing all this stuff or whatever it is, at some point, somebody going to look at you and be like, yo, why are we listening to you? Why? And I don't have an answer for that yet.
Like, I don't, like, it's funny. Like, I feel bad in saying this, but, like, I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know, dude. And I'll take their word for it and the people who vouch for them and the Patriots, but we've seen how that's worked in the past with the Patriots assistant coaches. So I guess, and I remember you asked me when they first hired him, and I just had to give the Kanye shrug, like, I guess. and that's where I am, I guess, like, with the Giants and the wait and see. Like, I don't have great expectations for them. The Giants are bad, but not bad enough to draft Trevor Lawrence. So that's where I am.
You're all in on this Trevor Lawrence thing.
Even more so, the things that he's come out and spoke about and putting his name behind and saying it with his chest on the social stuff as well. Like, I'm all in for that guy. Like, I know there's still questions about his height and accuracy at times, but, like, dude seems like he's got it, you know, and he gets it and he understands. Like, a lot of that confidence that Joe Burrow, had last year. So I'm all in on Trevor Lawrence. And he'll look good in those Jacksonville colors.
Tell me this. How bad would Daniel Jones have to be for Dave Gettleman to be like, I was wrong, we're taking Trevor Lawrence?
That's not going to happen. See, that's
There's
not
no circumstance
happen.
Under which that
that's
happens.
Not, it can't. That won't happen, because the minute that Gettleman admits that, Gettleman's gone. Like, that's the thing. He's tied so much, especially, where he drafted Jones and pushing all his marbles and all his cards to the middle of the table, whatever analogy you want to make. Like, he's put so much behind Jones that his GM job is completely tied to Daniel Jones' success. So that's why you would have, Saquon Barkley, a heavy run game, investing money in a first-round pick in the offensive line. Like, it has everything to do with making sure that Daniel Jones succeeds. Now, I still have questions about his weapons on the offense and who he's going to pass to.
But he full-on believes in him. Like, the one thing I got to say, to be fair to old buddy, is he actually believes in him. Like, I don't think it's simply I have to be proven right. He really believes that he is, in fact, correct. And look, people kept trying to tell me how much better Daniel Jones got as the year went on. I mean, I wasn't watching full Giants games, but I live here, you know what I'm saying? So I was dropping in. I was seeing a bit of it. And, dog, I didn't see what everybody was talking about. But part of it is I wasn't invested in being optimistic.
Right. I will say this for Jones. I get it. It was a rookie year, and he didn't have the best weapons. The thing that concerned me, though, the fumbles, is that something that's correctable, though? Because he had a lot of lost fumbles last year. I don't know what it... Like, that's something that concerned me last year. Like, the interceptions, that'll come. Like, I get that from a young quarterback. But the fumbles, that was something that was alarming. So, I don't know. I don't know. At one point, and maybe they'll give him, more time now that they have a new head coach. I just don't know what to make from him. And maybe as the quality of the talent improves around him, he'll get better. But right now, I just don't see it. And I'm not saying that because I want to be right that I wasn't as high on him coming out of Duke. That's not it at all, because ultimately I want my team to do well. But right now, I still have more questions about him and Joe Judge and that entire Giants team than answers right now.
Yo, here's my thing on fumbling. My hypothesis has always been fumblers don't stop fumbling. And I've had former players tell me the same thing. He's like one guy told me, he's like, I was a fumbler, all right? Fumbling is just not something. And the reason I'm inclined to believe that a fumbler can't stop fumbling is it ain't like fumbling is something that only becomes a problem when you're in the NFL, right? At every level, coaches hate fumbling and hate fumblers. Somebody has told you to quit fumbling the damn ball, and you still ain't done it.
Right. You got to the pros now, and it's still a problem. I don't understand. So maybe when Daniel Jones goes back to drop, maybe he'll hold it high and tight like Tiki. Maybe that could work. Like, try something different. I don't know.
Well, that's fair. I was about to say, I can name two guys who were fumblers and, like, reined it in. And that's Tiki Barber and Adrian Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two. I had forgotten about Tiki Barber. But even Adrian Peterson kind of sort of went back to being a fumbler. But part of Adrian Peterson being a fumbler is just being the most relentless human being in the world.
Right.
Daniel Jones is like, oh, damn, that's right. I got to hold on to that.
Enough about a bad team. Let me ask you about a really good team. Is there anyone that you see beating the Chiefs this year? Or what do you see as the biggest, Achilles heel for the Chiefs this year? Because I'm not seeing it right now.
I am struggling to see it, but let us not forget that one of their starting offensive linemen decided to go save the world instead of playing this year, and I mean that literally. So we kind of got that thing, but otherwise, now, man, it looked like the same team that couldn't nobody beat last year.
And it might even be a little bit better. Like, I like the dude, the running back that they drafted out of
LSU.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right?
Yo, did you know we were still making Clydes?
They still out here.
Can you imagine if a friend sent you a picture of their newborn baby and you said, what's his name? And they were like, Clyde? Nothing against Clyde as a name.
Right.
I just didn't think we were still making Clydes.
They out here.
I'm trying to think, do I know anybody myself who's still living named Clyde? Nah, I do not.
The fact that you said still living.
Yeah, I mean, Clyde Drexler is like the famousest Clyde that's still alive, but I just did not know that we were still like putting Clyde on children.
Right, like the Clyde that I grew up with on my block, he was Clyde. He was the mechanic on the block, so
yes.
He was always working on the car. And in the summertime, he sold watermelon. Like, he was the dude on the watermelon truck screaming, watermelon! Clyde was from either Virginia or North Carolina. So Clyde was the countryest man on McDonough Street that I grew up with in New York.
Yo, everything you said right there screams out Clyde. Like, that's the whole Clyde profile right there. I just didn't know we were still making Clydes. And isn't he like a 5'7 Clyde? Or is he a 5'9 Clyde?
Yeah, he's a sturdy, low center of gravity Clyde. Yeah.
You know what that means? Yeah. I better watch what I'm out here saying about Clyde.
Exactly. Like, yeah, he is a like legit bowling ball type Clyde. Like, I'm sure he's built like he works out to the fact that people clowned him for being a Clyde. You know
and
what I mean?
A short Clyde.
Stocky Clyde.
Yeah, I bet he's the one person who don't appreciate, like, let Leonard Fournette send one of them funny tweets about him. Clyde be like, yo, I'm going to see you. Maybe also Steve Smith.
Except Clyde will confront you from the front, not cheap shot you from the back.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Hashtag never forget.
Yo, I want to tell you something. It's kind of a deviation from what we've been talking about, but I think you'll find this interesting. So I was talking to a college football player a few days ago, and I was talking about like the great Miami teams. And I was talking about them kind of ubiquitously until it dawned on me, right, that like this is someone who is not old enough to have any recollection of those Miami teams. Like me talking about their Miami teams to them is like somebody older talking to us about like Johnny Unitas. And in fact, it might even be like even like more pronounced in some ways. Because like you think about it, Miami won their first national championship 37 years ago. Right. So I was talking to him about it and it dawned on me. Can you imagine if you were like a college athlete of these times with the levels of control and everything that these programs have over the players and you can't do anything after a play, there's no room for celebration, any of that stuff. Can you imagine how big their eyes are going to get when they watch the U?
And that's funny that you bring that up because, you know, they had both the U and the U part two. And you saw a lot of like current athletes at that time. Like, they were tweeting during, like, they just couldn't believe
yes!
how much access and freedom that these Miami players had. Like, it was like the Wild Wild West there. Like, it was legit, like, it was like the movie Scarface. It was like no hold barred. And so, and like, a lot of these players, like, they couldn't believe that these guys, you know, on the field, off the field, or whatever, the stuff that they were allowed to get away with.
No, they just, I mean, granted, it wasn't even so much they were allowed to get away with as much as they took it.
Well, yeah, that too.
You know what I'm saying? But, and to be fair to those kids, they'll never understand that, like, yeah, there was also Florida State, but it was really just Miami, right? Like, you couldn't look back at Miami and be like, wow, they was tripping in the old days. They was doing that in the old days. No, they were doing that in the old days. But I can't imagine how crazy it would look for some of them. These cats out here trying to get a legitimate COVID test, right? Mm-hmm. Miami out here telling the head coach, yeah, we'll run your offense, but we're going to run our defense. How about that?
How about that, Playboy?
Yeah, what you got on that? Or you can take your ass back to Washington State.
You brought it up with the level of control that these college programs have, though. How do you see that changing now that we've had, you know, athletes, college athletes speaking up now and using their voices? So how do you think that paradigm shift is going to work? Good in the offseason, but now that, you know, for these leagues that are actually, these conferences that are actually playing, like, how do you think that'll play out, not just this year, but moving forward, and the players being able to speak more freely?
But they're not able to speak more freely than they ever were before, to be honest.
You don't think so?
Nah. I mean, I guess they got the tools now, the internet, you know, and everything else that they can do a little bit more. But when the rubber actually meets the road, they're still shutting it down. That's my whole thing about it is, or they'll let them talk. What the NCAA loves to do on these things and what they're going to try to do with these players now is, like, get a little committee, right? And then they come in and they meet, like, once a month or whatever, and they hear for what the players are doing. But in the end, the players don't actually have any, like, real live power. Like, the players got that dude out of there in Iowa, right? But all these other coaches that got caught saying wild, ridiculous things, they all still got their jobs. You know, they're all still there. We had dudes get caught saying the N-word, still working their jobs. We had that big bombshell report out of Colorado State. That dude, you know, them dudes are still all working there. Mike Bobo was included in that. He wound up getting him another job. He still work over there. Like, nothing, like, to me, nothing's actually changing because the guys don't actually have any power. And if worse come to worse, if the schools want to squash them like grapes, then the school can do it, and nobody will care. And we know that nobody will care because we're watching people all across America literally not care if these boys live or die just as long as they give them some football.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a little bit. Like, it's been so shameful the way that I watch people talk about college football. Look, if they're doing this and they're actually doing it safely, then go ahead, knock yourself out. But the idea that the Big Ten is out here actually concerned about the safety of the players, and they're like, look, we're getting information that tells us that this is a bad idea, so we're not going to do it. And people are like, explain this to us. And I'm like, wait a minute. I would want more of an explanation from the people who are playing. Right? Like, I understand what you get out of not playing. The people who are putting them out there, aren't they the ones that need to explain this?
Right. Like, I get, like, the players that want to play and all. It's just, like, I'm still not comfortable having these athletes on college campuses. Just being honest. And not just athletes, but college kids in general. And I get it. A lot of times they can be more sheltered, for a lack of a better term, or in a safer or more confined space for the athletes than the general population. I get that. But I still myself wouldn't feel comfortable with the dangers, because we know how college kids are. Like, college kids are going to do college kids. Like, it's going to be tough to tell a college kid not to party or not to socialize or not to mingle. You got to think about it. Like, I have a situation now where I have a younger brother who's in his freshman year in college now, and he's staying on campus, and I talk to him, and I'm like, hey, you know, make sure, David, make sure you be safe. And then, yeah, I'm safe. You know, I go to my room, go to CAF, go to the, you know, rec hall, and then I come back. I'm like, the rec hall, like, you're there socializing with other people. Like, I just can't trust it. I mean, call me paranoid, call me, you know, what it is, but, like, I can't trust these college kids to make the best decisions. You know,
oh, no!
Because I was in that position myself. Like, I can't trust it.
They're the most unreliable people in the world, and college is all about making horrific decisions. It's the funnest part of the whole bag.
Right,
is the
right.
Terrible decisions.
Right. You want to let them live as well. And like, for a lot of these kids, it's their first time being away from home. Like, you want them to have that college experience. Like, you learn a lot more about yourself outside the classroom than you do actually what you learn in the classroom. Like, that's where you grow, and it helps you become the person that you are. And so you're going to have, you know, these kids are naturally going to want to experience that. But at the same time, how do you tell them to do that? But at the same time, you got to stifle yourself because of the COVID stuff. Like, I just don't see how that's going to work.
You got to try whatever it is that you have the option to try. And so they just go roll the dice on this, and it's just kind of fingers crossed. And I mean, we going to see how it goes. I do want to ask you, we have not talked about what is absolutely the most compelling thing to happen this offseason. Honestly, it's the kind of thing that has allowed you and I both to come work at a company like the one we work for, because these topics are the things are why we wake up in the morning. And that is, Cam Newton plays for the New England Patriots now. And you live, like, in Boston-like world. You know, you up in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find it as hilarious as I did that people really tried to act like that was a quarterback competition?
Like that, like, I guess they had to make Clint Stidham feel better about himself. Or whatever, or Jarrett Stidham, or whoever he is. Like, had to make him feel better. Brian Hoyer, is he still, whoever the dudes that they got on that roster.
Yes, that's them.
To make them feel better about themselves and keep them at a moral high ground, because we all knew ultimately Cam was going to get the job. You wouldn't bring Cam in to be a backup. He's no one's backup. I know he struggled with injuries and he had the shoulder problems for a couple years, but he's no one's backup. I just can't wait. I am highly anticipating the post game. One, the post game press conference every week, and then also win, lose, or draw, I'm the Boston and New England fans and how they perceive Cam Newton. Because I generally wonder, like, are they going to allow him or accept him for being as eccentric that he is, or do they care as long as he's winning? Like, that's like, I can't wait for that. Like, I try to avoid message boards, but it's going to be hard not to follow that stuff this year with Cam and how he's going to perceive in Boston.
Well, the thing that I think is going to be interesting, and you got, again, a little bit of a better grasp on this part because you actually live up there, but I feel like the Patriots give so little access, generally speaking, that it may not be that hard for them to ignore Cam's eccentricity, because there'll be so many places for the eccentricity to be on display. Like, maybe that's the part of it. But, hey, man, if he does not play well, man, he's going to need to buy some new clothes. Like, if he come out here not playing well and show up in one of them, what they call it, a get-up?
Uh-huh.
Whoo, they not going to be good with that, baby. They are not going to be good with that. Like, Dan always talks about this with Dwayne Wade. Like, you know, when Dwayne Wade used to be out there wearing get-ups?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't wearing no get-up if it was game 6 and they were down 3-2.
Oh, no. Cam's wearing his get-up. Oh, no. Yes. Oh, no. This is, every game is his runway. Win, lose, or draw. He didn't have his own line at belt call made for him not to be out here wearing his own getup. Like that,
yes.
That's going to happen, win, lose, or draw. I do wonder, too, like how much, what the fans' acceptance of Cam, how much of the Tom Brady factor is going to be in this as well? Because it would have been one thing if Brady would have retired, and then, okay, you can move on. But the fact that whatever Cam does, and you're going to have Brady playing at the same time, that's going to be interesting to watch as well.
Well, look, man, it's one thing to get, like, your first black starting quarterback in the history of your franchise. It's another when the first black starting quarterback in the history of your franchise, like you skipping all the steps, you going straight to Cam Newton. You know what I'm saying? And look, I understand that Jacoby Brissett did start a couple of games that one year, but he wasn't the starting quarterback. He just started a couple of games. You understand the difference? This is your starting quarterback. This is team captain Cam Newton. Team captain, Shannon.
From what I've heard, Cam is a great teammate and all of that stuff, so that's fine. But I do wonder, though, when I saw him being named captain, I do wonder how much of that, and maybe I'm overthinking, how much of that was just part of the sell to the New England fans for their acceptance of Cam, like to say that he's, you know, he's one of the captains, one of the leaders on this team, you know, rather than folks creating some sort of narrative out there about him being, you know, a bad teammate or a bad guy who doesn't care or self-absorbed, yeah, or some of the other stuff that we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, but I imagine that the players voted on that one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're also at a point in time, man, there's a lot of young, you know, a lot of young dudes in the league, like, yo, that's still Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's some kid in the league who grew up wanting to be Cam Newton. Or Cam Newton was his favorite player. Like, all of those things. It's there. I just, you know, we got the other part, which is none of us know if he's still any good.
See, that's the thing too. Like, that's the big one. Like, that's the big one. Like, like, because he's always been so, you know, superior, you know, a superior athlete and the things that he can do. And I'm not taking away from his QB IQ and any of those things, but he's always been, you know, the biggest, baddest on the field. And I mean, he is what, 30 now, 30, 31, and getting up there, and he's had taken a lot of hits on his body. So I don't know physically what he can do if he can't be Superman. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm not going to say he's out here and he's, you know, Clark or anything like that, but he's probably not. He's closer to Clark now than probably Superman. But is that going to be good enough to win? And, I mean, he still plays in the AFC East. So, like, there's still a chance that they can win the division. I just don't know ultimately how far that the Patriots will be able to go.
Yeah, man. But, you know, it's been a while, Shannon.
Oh, has it?
It's been a while.
Well, I mean, it's been a while. Like, it's been a while. Like, Cam, and it's been a while since he's, like, folks have talked about him now. Like, it's really weird. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's Cam Newton. And we know him for a lot of things. You know, what, Heisman Trophy winner at Auburn, and there were questions there, and first overall pick, and MVP, league MVP in 2015, and Super Bowl appearance, and all of those things. And now it's 2020, and Cam is back, right? So we get Cam press conferences, right? We get all the goodness from Cam. Like, I'm totally excited to have Cam Newton back. Like, I am at the top. Like, I'm interested to see if he can be back to himself. I want to see if he can be as aggressive and as he has been in the past with his play. I wanted to see, speaking of his aggressiveness, Cam, can you tell him about your aggressiveness, please?
My music selection is pretty aggressive with the softness. Just tone it down just a little second so we can clear our minds and, you know, put like a little heavenly voice in our hearts and minds.
A heavenly voice in our hearts and minds, because he did say that him in New England is a match made in heaven. So, yes, he is wants to have that heavenly vibe. But I'm interested to see, you got Belichick, you got McDaniels there with Cam. I don't know what kind of formations that they're going to run. But I'm sure it's going to be a surprise. But he's not going to let them, he's not going to let the defense week in and week out know what he's going to do.
We're not going to let the cat out the hat.
He is not going to let the cat out the hat. And I'm sure he's going to come out. He's going to play well. And the Patriots are going to be one of the top teams in AFC East. And they're going to be feeling very good about themselves. Isn't that right, Cam?
This hiatus that we're on right now, you know, no one in that locker room wants to come down from.
Not one person in that New England locker room is going to want to come down from that hiatus that they're on. And granted, I don't think they're going to go 16-0 in the regular season. So I'm sure they're going to have some losses. And when you look back on it, on your losses, what you did the previous week, you can only look back on it and make improvements from that. Isn't that right, Cam?
Hindsight's always 50-50.
You can only go up from there when you lose. But, you know, I'm not the type that's out here making guarantees or any of that stuff. But I feel pretty good to say that Cam's going to have a backup season. So, matter of fact, Bomani, I'm not really about guarantees, but I can guarantee you this, that Cam Newton's going to have a bounce back year. Isn't that right, Cam?
You can probably, you know, ink it in gold.
Like, write it down. We're recording this podcast. You can ink it. You can write it down. You can ink it in gold that Cam Newton's going to have a bounce back season because, like he's been waiting. He's been lying and waiting and ready to show what he can do because, like, folks have been talking bad about him in the past, but he's ready to come back and show who he can be. Because if you make him mad,
ruffle the lion's feathers.
You do not want to ruffle the lion's feathers. And that's what I think these people are going to do. Because they've seen him play at a high level in the past, and they kind of got used to it. Like, he spoiled them with his level of play. I don't know, Cam, what would you say about the level of play that you've had in the past?
The monotonism of life could get old.
The monotonism of life can get old. They took it for granted because they saw it week in and week out. But no, but Cam is back. He's excited. He's feeling good about himself. It's a match made in heaven.
You know, our morals are high.
Their morals are high right now. It's week one. Excited to be back. You got Bill Belichick on the defensive side. You got Cam Newton on the offensive side. This is one team that's going to be strong week in and week out. And they're going to come in and they're going to have a great game plan. And there's nothing that the other team can do about it. Right, Cam?
We just wanted to come out and oppose our will.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to oppose their will. Nope, you can't stop a team that comes out and oppose their will. They're going to keep going. They're going to keep fighting. They're going to keep
moving the pendulum forward.
Got to keep moving the pendulum forward. It's not going to stop. It can't stop. Because when you keep pushing and moving the pendulum forward, you get to the mountaintop. You get to the...
You know, you put a person up on a pinnacle and you just analyze them from so many different areas. It's kind of unfair, but, you know, that's the life we live.
That is absolutely the life we live. And finally, Cam, like, when you're playing well, it's the NFL, so and you got COVID out here, so you're going to lose a couple guys throughout the season, but you got to keep going. You got to keep pushing, moving forward to the... for the Super Bowl, and when doing so, what has to happen, Cam?
Nevertheless, you know, the Titanic still has to go.
The Titanic absolutely still has to go, no matter what. So I see nothing but positives for Cam Newton in New England this year with the Patriots.
I'm positive.
For some people, it will be unpositive, but not for Cam. He's going to have a bounce back year, and I can't wait to see what happens.
Never gets old.
Shut off the dome too. Like people have asked me about that in the past, and I purposely don't write in. I know I need to update the Cam list, but like that's it just comes straight off the dome. So shout out to Gabe for having those available for us because like for me, honestly, like, you know, people they do their fantasy teams and they do the sleepers and all of this stuff. But for me, you know how I know when it's the NFL season? When I start getting Cam quotes and when we could do Camisms. Like for me, that's my NFL, and that's for me, that means the NFL is back.
Yes, sir. That is Shannon Penn. Check him out. Chinay and Golic Jr. is producing that 4 to 7 Monday through Friday on ESPN Radio. Also, Thursday nights is from 8 to 10 with Clinton and Nell.
9 to 11 Thursday nights on ESPN Radio. And we got Chinay and Golic 4 to 7 on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this a couple times a week. Gabe Bastain and Tarika Foster help me with everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Also, thank you to our sponsors. And, of course, thanks to Shannon Penn. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.